WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are celebrating 25 years. We got the cupcake out in front. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. We're going to have the Maryland Scratch-Offs on the 15th at Fadley's in Lexington Market in the morning, celebrating our partnership with Coppin State. It's going to be football season. The Orioles are going to be in the playoffs. And we're going to have one Bruce Springsteen concert down, but one more to go because Bruce is, of course, playing Oriole Park at Camden Yards. This great place that is electrified already before the band gets here with First Place Baseball, as well as down at Nats Park. Nils Lofgren has been my friend for 36, 7, 8 years. I don't know, with Shriver Hall many, many years ago with Don Wehner, post-grin, and he's still grinning, but during the E Street era. And we get together every couple of years, and I get together with him more often than he gets together with me because I'm standing behind you in Austin and Houston and Tampa and putting pictures up and having a good time. He has an album. He's in the middle of a tour. And I said, I can't believe you're spending half of your day off with me, Nils, but I appreciate your love through all the years. I've watched all of this. This has been something grueling to watch, and now you're releasing an album and doing these things with people like me to talk about how important this album is to you. But are you rested? You look great, man.
Well, you know, I'm loving the work. I don't like leaving home. Amy's at home with our dogs. I miss them terribly, but next month is September is 55 years on the road. I've found, thankfully, I'm more grateful and joyful walking out on stage with a great band. Thankfully, I love that more than ever. So, you know, leaving home's part of it, but I'm loving the playing and just thrilled to be out with Bruce and the band. I don't think the band and the audiences are as good as I've ever seen them. So that's very exciting. And of course, you know, the last year and a half, I worked on a record and got that done, which I'm really happy about because COVID kind of threw me for a loop. And, you know, I was not touring because the little clubs I play weren't safe. And I go out to my studio and like I put on B.B. King, Albert King, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf. That was my top four. And I just play along, you know, karaoke, jamming along. And after a while, I just thought you got to do something professionally. And touring in the little clubs wasn't safe for me. So I challenged myself to make a record, thus Mountains. I feel good about it.
You went out to the desert a long time ago. I mean, I should call this a home game for you to be playing Oriole Park at Camden Yards. And you guys have played a lot of baseball stadiums. I've seen you in Philly more than a handful of times. But Oriole Park kind of new to all this. McCartney, Billy Joel, they haven't had a whole lot of concerts. And you know, a home game for you. You grew up here, looking at the same stuff we looked at. You wrote Bullets Fever. Every time I mention you, somebody mentions Bullets Fever to me about you. But your band and what you've done, and then you've gone into Bruce Land and E Street World. When did you get to the desert? Because when I see mountains, you've traveled the world, man. I've traveled the world with you. I've seen you on two or three or four continents. I haven't counted them up. But you see things, but I know where you live. You know what I mean? I know what sky, I know where that area is. And it's so unique to the world that you see mountains. I would think you're inspired every day by the beauty of it, but something drew you out there because you could live anywhere you want, right?
Yeah, well, the truth is, somewhere, I don't know, very early 80s, I was playing the Stone Pony, famous club in Asbury Park. I saw this beautiful girl, talked her into hanging out with me at the Princess Motel. We talked till 6 a.m. Her name was Amy Aiello. And, you know, my tour bus was going to Boston at 6 a.m. after a great gig at the Pony. She wasn't there to see me. She was just there with some girlfriends. And I couldn't talk her into coming on the bus to keep, you know, talking and getting to know each other. She said she had a job. Her mom would kill her. So, of course, 4:30 a.m., having a few drinks. I said, give me your mom's number. I'll call her and square it. Give me your boss's number. I'll work it out with him. And said, you're not calling my boss or my mother at 4:30 in the morning. So I said goodbye, loved her, and I was in Jersey every 3 months playing a bar. I thought for sure she'd show back up because I thought she liked me. I didn't see her for 15 years. So 15 years later, 27 years ago, playing a bar, the Rockin' Horse in Scottsdale, Arizona, great club. again, getting ready to get on the bus to San Diego. She walks up at the end of the show, says, "Hey, remember me?" And I remembered more about the night than she did. She had a 5-year-old son. Both of us were almost done with divorces. And thankfully, that night I got her number, and we've been together ever since. So that's why I wound up in Scottsdale.
Well, my wife sends her best to Amy. And I know, like, during the Trump era and then during the lockdown, I was at the last show that you played with E Street, that all of you played together before Bruce did Broadway and all of that, the show in New Zealand. I left night. No, I was Mount Smart Stadium. I was in New Zealand with you guys. And
wow.
I was at Christchurch when the whole city, my city of ruins, like all of that happened. I was in Brisbane with you guys. So, you know, I had seen the last E Street. I'd seen Bruce a couple of times up on Broadway. My connection to you is our friendship, but Facebook and Twitter and her getting thrown off Twitter and then me getting thrown off Twitter and Trump running the country and my city of ruins. You know what I mean? My city having Freddie Gray and the tanks and the mayors and like, and then Trump gets elected. And, you know, I see your politics. Everybody knows Bruce's politics. I also was in Cleveland the night when you were campaigning for Obama and Bruce was playing out in the streets that night. But I've seen you with Jamie Raskin, right? I mean, your wife and you, the outspokenness and what happened during Trump and then COVID, I think really speaks to what you're speaking to in Mountains and your truth, that this is your truth. And a chance to do that and maybe not do it from a 25 or 30-year-old perspective, but do it from your wisdom from seeing the world.
Yeah, you know, I think, Amy in particular, much more than me, has been a very vocal fighter on social media, Twitter and Instagram for, you know, human rights, women's rights, children's rights. I mean, there's been a war on women my entire life. And basically, you know, I mean, the fact that they just decided, you know, you get three judges that lie under oath and then rescind a woman's rights to choose about having a kid. And then, you know, hey, if your uncle rapes you and you're 11, you're going to have the kid. We're not going to help you raise it. What the hell is that about? You know, it's very, so I've kind of gotten more aware thanks to Amy. And the opening track, probably one of my better songs in a long time. In fact, there's a new video out with Ringo and Kevin McCormick and Cindy Mizell on the song Ain't the Truth Enough. And there's a prequel through the video. It's a story about what would a fierce mother do with a husband that just came back from the insurrection of January 6th. And that's the song Ain't the Truth Enough. And of course, throughout mankind, you know, if the truth's not enough, you're in trouble. And one of my better songs, but that was Mountains. It was not so much about Arizona. It was just about the troubles and the new challenges we've all had to climb. I think everyone on earth has had PTSD from COVID and some kind of politics, especially in the States. And so, you know, I challenged myself to write a record. It's just not about, I don't even call it politics. It's just humanity. I mean, you know, being the religion of kindness to each other and living in the truth. We're not doing that. And it's funny, I'm the disease of alcohol and addiction have touched so many of us and our friends, but the addiction of greed and power and money, there's no rehabs for that. And now you've got, you know, we're at kind of a turning point with climate change and just cruelty to mankind and especially, you know, women, children, just in general, the cruelty needed to, you know, have billionaires become trillionaires, and it's never enough. And so now democracy's in the way of that, and they've decided to get rid of democracy. So what the hell are we going to do about it? I mean, just kind of a mad time. And strangely enough, Nestor, Ain't the Truth Enough is not a mean-spirited song, and neither is the video. I'll send it to you when we get off. But, you know, I had these flashbacks. I grew up in the 60s. We had the Vietnam War, the draft lottery. I got a low number, had to go to Fort Hollaberg, all the assassinations. Grin, my old band Grin, played at the civil rights marches downtown in D.C.
You were at Fort Hollaberg? So Fort Hollaberg in Baltimore?
I had to go to Fort Hollaberg for a physical, and if I passed, I was going to Vietnam.
That's Dundalk, man. I mean, literally, that's my neighborhood.
They have what was called the lottery. And they established a lottery where you couldn't just walk in with a note from your doctor. Hey, this kid shouldn't be in the army. if you got a low number and you passed your physical, you were going. And it was very scary times. And I felt like the Trump years and what's going on with climate change and everything else and the lack of rights for women's and children. And of course, you know, African-Americans, anybody that's not white and rich, really. It just gave me flashbacks to that era. And that's the mountains I speak of, you know, climbing these new challenges that in my early 70s, I was hoping we were headed to greener pastures as a civilization. And there's all these beautiful people doing wonderful things. A lot of them with nothing, no money, living in poverty. They put schools together for girls that don't have any rights in their country. But unfortunately, those people aren't in charge. So we're at a turning point now. And I just wrote whatever came out. Had a lot of help from, you know, Neil Young sang on a track, Nothing's Easy Except You. I did a song, Only Your Smile. It's kind of a Tony Bennett, Nat King Cole ballad. I wrote on the piano and played it. Ron Carter, the famous jazz bassist, played on it upright. Cindy Mizell sang beautifully. David Crosby, rest his soul. Cros sang with me on a song, which really I remember her name, is the story of meeting Amy and having 15 years between our first and second date. So it's really an emotional record. I feel great about it. And, you know, of course, you can get it at nilstalkman.com. We've got vinyl, CDs. You can download it on any of the sites. But I'm glad I got that done as a professional musician before this tour hit. And I'm happy to, you know, get it out there and share it because it was kind of a journey for me to feel like I was doing something besides being the houseboy, because Amy runs the ship. She's great at it, but I don't really have any skills past playing blues guitar. So I put it to good use and made, I think, a good record.
The great Nils Lofgren joins us from East Street and, you know, fresh off of MetLife and headed to Camden Yards. And he'll be at Nats Park later in the month, of course, with Bruce and the band. The new album is Mountains, and we're discussing all aspects of that. You know, when I think of Bruce's career and I think of the Rising and I think of 9/11 and a reaction to that, and that every artist, and, you know, you're not the first, not the only Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I had Gina Schock on from Dundalk, from the Go-Go's, who's she came out, had a crab cake with me recently, is spending a lot more time back in Baltimore, and just talking to every artist about COVID and about that lockdown period where you're home, wherever you are in life's journey, and it's what you do. You write, you try to pass time, you try to be creative in some way. At what point do you know you have an album? At what point is it just not screwing around and playing chords or writing a song or a couple of songs to say, hey, this is a project I'm going to be doing with Nestor on Bruce's tour when I go out, we're going to release an album? Because you don't have to do this at this point in your life. This is clearly, you're an artist, and I guess it always inspires me to see all of you get together and play. Because it's tough to go out on the road and the money and all that, and what it cost us to go. But you have to love it to do it. You have to be fully committed to do it. And to put an album out at this point, there's got to be an on-off switch to say, maybe that's a little too much. Or, hey, I want to do that again.
Well, you know, what happens is, first of all, I got a gift I did not ask for. I didn't create the gift. Between my parents' DNA and some kind of higher power, and I'm not talking about religion, personally, I'm a recovering Catholic. I had a really bad experience with the Catholic Church. So, you know, I think most religions are kind of cults. That was my experience. I'm talking about a higher power, some kind of God's fine with me. But, you know, there's something more than us out there. And I got a gift I didn't ask for. And I realized, you know, home with COVID, just playing blues guitar to B.B. King, Albert King, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, that wasn't enough. I had to use my gift or it starts making you a little ill inside. And so since I couldn't tour safely, I challenged myself to write a record. And way back when I was a teenager, we'd come out to Baltimore, UMBC, the Bluesette, play it all the time. We were up in Baltimore constantly. It's certainly just, to me, as much home as D.C. And, you know, I remember this was a while ago when I still had a home in Gaithersburg, which we don't have anymore. We took Dylan, my son, and a couple of his buddies out to Baltimore. We stayed at the Inner Harbor, saw that beautiful aquarium. We went to a ball game, and it started dumping rain to the point where they called the game and sent us all out of the stadium. We were laughing because we were walking back to the hotel. It was just like buck buckets of rain, but just, you know, it's just a great place. I love coming back there. I love that we have a show outdoors there in the stadium. But, you know, back to mountains, you know, again, if you have this gift and you ignore it long enough, you start getting ill inside. And that's what was happening for me. I mean, I love being home with Amy and our dogs. Dylan's down the road. He'd come over regularly. But I wasn't exercising this gift. And after 3 years of not touring, you know, I said, man, you better write a record, do something professional. And that's mountains. And it helped me, you know, it helped me cope with all the crazy we're all dealing with and still are. Like, are we going to have a democracy in a couple of years? I don't know. I don't want to move. I don't want to move to Europe or Denmark or Sweden or Norway or Finland. Beautiful place. I want to live in America, but I want it to be, you know, it seemed like we were headed towards a promise of looking out for people and being a real democracy and letting everyone have a voice and a vote. Then all of a sudden now we got these trillionaires that don't have enough money, and they've decided, look, unless you're, you know, super wealthy and white, you're less than us, you don't count. And the war on women is just insane. I mean, you know, it's not quite as bad as some of the countries in the world where, I don't know, Nestor. I mean, I shouldn't be judging people so harshly, but, you know, just because, you know, you're nervous asking a girl to dance and you're lusting after her and you're attracted and you're too nervous, you don't know how to handle it. The next step isn't throwing a sheet on her, making her a slave and taking away all her rights in your country. That's not the next step. The next step is going up and say, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And let it go from there. And I mean, men have done a pretty shit job of running the world at this point. We got a lot of problems. I think we ought to turn it over to the women and give them a shot at it, because I think they do a better job. I think they have a reverence for life, giving birth, that in general, men kind of lose as parents along the way and get wrapped up in money. And now with TV and the internet, man, it's challenging. We're not policing it properly. And, you know, it's just a crazy time. With the album, like, back to your question, because I talk a lot, rather than write 30 songs and agonize over what might be an album, I just wrote an album. When I had 10 songs, I learned how to play and sing them live. I didn't want to piece the album together. I wanted to play and sing live. Then when you have the core of a performance, it's fun to add touches or, you know, hey, ask Neil Young, will you sing on this? Yeah, I'd love to. That's fun then. So I made sure I had a record I felt strong about and I could sing and play it live, which each performance is, and then, you know, build nice touches around it. Got a lot of great help.
Do you go back to old notebooks from something you wrote on a tour bus back on a Tunnel of Love tour, you know, or just say, hey, maybe that was a piece of a song to bring in? Or is it all completely blank sheet of paper and say, I'm going to do an album. I got a piece of one song or two songs right here and now? Because I would think, as a writer myself, I have notes and notes and notes and notes of just things that I want to say at some point in life, and I haven't gone back and grabbed it again to pull it together.
Well, you're right. It's all of the above. Most of these songs are new, but I went through all my notebooks, 7 or 8 notebooks, looking for something that might be, like, a lot of times I'll have a, you know, song like Ain't the Truth Enough. That idea came to me. I wanted it to be a much deeper subject matter. So I came up with the idea I mentioned, a fierce mom dealing with a husband just home from the January 6th insurrection. It went from there. Cindy Mizell was the woman's voice represented. She sang her ass off. But yes, I go through my old notebooks. A lot of my songs are like not complete in 2 days. That Ain't the Truth Enough. 2 or 3 days, it was done. I love those songs. But most of them are kind of jigsaw puzzles. I'll chip away at them sometimes for months, sometimes for years. And then I was like, I need a bridge. That song's over. I'm stealing this part. And now I plug it in. A couple songs like that. Angel Blues. You know, the idea there's angels among us, there's angels above us, and we're making them weary, not taking good enough care of the human race. So that was an old song I completed on the piano. You know, I just love the idea of comforting each other, like, lean your weary halo on my wing and let the peace come. There's angels all around us doing great work. We got to help each other. And, like, I think it was, I don't know, I think Amy told me years ago, one of the Dalai Lamas, or maybe the Dalai Lama, said, my religion is kindness. That's what we need, man. We just need to be kind. We can be crazy and go to football games. And hell, I played football and basketball well into my adulthood and had to stop to tackle football because we all started getting hurt. But I played basketball all the way up till I needed two metal hips 15 years ago.
That was the trampolines that did that, man. Come on, that was the tramp move that did that, right?
Yeah, it was that. But jumping off a trampoline with a guitar, doing backflips, jumping off drum risers, PA stacks for 40 years. But most of it really was playing. I played about 20 hours of basketball in city courts every week, you know, asphalt courts.
How that tall are you, either. Nils?
I'm only 5'3".
5'3", so I'm seeing a little Muggsy Bow. I'm seeing a little spark plug. I'm seeing a little point guard kind of thing, a little bit, right?
You got it. I go to the pickup games. I love 3-on-3. That's my favorite game because you're always passing, shooting, dribbling, playing defense. But I get into some heavier games, 5-on-5, and better players, but they let me play because I was a great passer. I prefer to pass the ball, and I was good at it. And I was a hellacious defensive player. You know, most of the guys at the park, they don't want to play defense that hard. They put me on the best player who was way better than me, but I'd hassle the hell out of them. Sometimes they'd almost, you know, I'd get almost beat up, but I'd hassle the hell out of their best player and keep them from getting the ball. And I was valuable as a defensive player. And point guard, pass the ball around. I was great at that. I still miss playing, but with two metal hips, you can't really play a hellacious 3-on-3.
I'm sure Bruce loves having you in his on his team as well. Nils Lofgren is here from the E Street Band. The new album is Mountains. You can find it all out at nilslofgren.com. There's videos, there's stuff, there's information, all of that, as well as, you know, all the charity work that you've done over the years where I said, hey, Nils, can you leave me tickets in Brisbane? And, you know, I all the stuff you've done. But songwriting, there was something you said to me. You and I sat down many times. I got 4 or 5 different long form, you and me, BSing about all sorts of things over the years at Super right. Bowls and whatnot. You said something about, I'm in a band with the greatest songwriter ever, right? Like seeing that and seeing his work. And then there's Neil Young. And then you name your child Dylan, right? So, you know, there's being a songwriter and trying to know when a song's done, knowing when it's good enough, knowing when it's good enough for you. What have you learned about songwriting in 2020 as a 60-something-year-old guy versus when you were doing this for Grin in the 70s?
Well, you know, it's 2023. I'm 72, hanging around for, between Neil Young and Bruce Springsteen and, of course, Bob Dylan. They might be our three greatest writers to me. There's dozens and dozens of incredible writers, but to me, those are probably the best three. And hanging
around.
Wait,
you're in a band
with
a guy from the Beatles, too. I'm just going to throw that. I just got to put that in for a minute.
And Ringo was kind enough to play his ass off on Ain't the Truth Enough, and he let me use one of his vocals where he goes, Peace and Love, in another song, We Better Find It. And, I just learned that you stick with it until you know it's done and you don't overthink it. That's what I do with this record. I mean, no, not yet, but you keep chipping away. I usually get up in the dark. When I'm off the road, I get up at the crack of dawn, sneak out of the room. Rose, our 105-pound mix dog, comes out, keeps me company as I wrote this record. And I'd chip away at it, but I'd stay at it till each song was complete. And I'm sure by osmosis. I mean, look, I've been playing with Neil Young and Crazy Horse on and off for 52 years, with Bruce 40 years next year. Like, funny, I've got 90 years into those two bands, doing the first two Ringo Starr All-Star tours. What a gift, you know, to be in a band with one of the Beatles, because I was playing classical accordion, and it was the Beatles that got me off the accordion into, you know, picking up rock and roll just as a hobby and for fun. And the Beatles, Stones, the British Invasion, the American counterpart. It was through them that I discovered Stax Volt, Motown, Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, Little Richard, all of it through the Beatles and Stones. But, you know, to get to be in a band with Ringo was just a joy. And, of course, the first band, I met him in 85 on the Born in the USA tour at his home, birthday party, jammed with him. It was great. I sat around having some drinks at the end of the night. He gave me his phone number, said, stay in touch. I called him every 3 or 4 weeks. And I lived in L.A., in which he had a home, too, and he's still there. So in 89, it's a fun story. He Oh, speaking of fun stories, I mean,
You're meandering. I'm writing them all down. Go ahead.
So what? So what? I'm meandering. So I've got this new thing because people like my stories. So at my website now, there's something called Rockality. It's my reality in rock and roll. I tell stories. And then I play a little music at the end. You can check them out. There's three episodes, three more coming. I'm just going to tell these stories and make them available. But in 89, it's called Rockality. But anyway, at 89, Ringo calls and he says, look, you know, I don't need all this money and fame. I've got it. I'm not good inside because I'm not playing. I'm not a musician. I have to find a way to go play, like I was talking about earlier. If you've got a gift that you don't use, starts making you ill. So he said, I've got an idea for a band, all-star band. Well, we all, it's a round robin. We all take turns doing two or three of our own songs. I can run up and sing some of his hits, Photograph, you know, Don't Come Easy, songs like that. You're 16, but I want to play drums most of the night, backing everybody else up. And I want you in the band, picking my favorite musicians. And I was like, so honored. And I was out of my mind. We're going to be 4 months. Pick your songs. Here's the dates. Count me in. I'm elated. And I go to say goodbye. And Ringo says, well, wait a minute. Don't you want to know who's in the band? And I said, well, you're in the band. I said, I am. He said, well, that's enough for me. And we both laughed. He said, well, let me tell you anyway. You and Joe Walsh are on guitars. Dr. John's on piano. Billy Preston's on organ. Jim Keltner's on drums. Levon Helm and Rick Danko are in the band. And Clarence Clemens is playing sax. And I was like, you got to be kidding me, man. That's the greatest assembly probably of pure talent in history. And he agrees. And bless his heart, he's like been doing it 32 years now. And he's still out. He's going out this fall at 83. It's a great inspiration, the body of work the Beatles have left. To me, the greatest body of recorded music in history. And, of course, it's a great honor to call him friend. And keep having them come out and sing and play for us. And obviously appearing on my record was a beautiful thing.
I put this question out on Facebook just to be clever. You know, I'm the old music critic. I said, what's the greatest song ever written? And the reason I put it out was just I bought an old school iPod back in January, like has a cord, right. No Wi-Fi, none of that, or the old schooler classic. And I just was wondering, like, if there's 50 songs that would show up that I'd be like, oh yeah, or hey, I should give that another listen. And my friend Dave Shinen, who writes for the Washington Post, writes baseball, covers the Olympics, and he's a musician as well, has a great song that we use as our new bed music here at NST. He wrote on there, I think Sarah. And I'm like, oh man, that's a great song, Fleetwood Mac. And I'm thinking Stevie Nicks. And we get together, he's like, no, Dylan Sarah. So I got the wrong song. So for you, what makes a great song? And in your mind, and take a crack at it, what's the greatest song ever written?
Well, you know, obviously a great song is a combination of music and lyric, regardless of who sings it. Melody, chords, and lyric is the bottom ingredients. And there's been hundreds of great, great songs written. But I guess if I had to be put on the spot, I don't know, I'd pick Blowing in the Wind by Bob Dylan. It's the greatest song ever written. A close second would be Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. Not sure who wrote that, but those are, you know, some of the top two for me. But there's just endless great songs. I mean, In Your Eyes, Peter Gabriel. When I first was talking to Amy for the second time, because I went on the road, we talked 3 hours a day. I was worried, well, what's her take on music? And I brought up music because, of course, I have to have that in common with someone. And right like that, she recited the entire lyric to In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel. So I knew I had somebody passionate about music to get to know and fall in love with. We've often, if Peter wasn't playing in Phoenix, we take a trip to the Santa Monica Bowl, saw him there. I just saw him recently in Europe. He's still as good as ever. Basically the same core band, Manu Cachet, you know, Tony Levin on bass. Just amazing. But, you know, you could listen.
He doesn't get in the ball and go around the stage anymore, right? He didn't do that trick.
No, but there's incredible. He found these in great every song. He get a visual artist to do the video and backdrop for that song. Brilliant people. So like each song was a movie, and it was a visual assault. It really was.
Sledgehammer and all of that in the 80s, but
all of it, but.
But he's playing in a couple weeks. He's playing America right now, and I'm putting a night together to try to see him in Philly or D.C. or New York because, I mean, he's sensational all the time.
And, you know, I mean, it's just apples and oranges. I mentioned those two songs. You got In Your Eyes. Bruce probably could throw in a dozen songs in there, you know, If I Should Fall Behind. I mean, what are the greatest ballads, love songs in history? And just not just, you know, your partner, but just the idea of like, hey, somebody falls behind, you wait for them. That's what the world needs. You know, like Dionne Warwick saying, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. That's another classic. I mean, there's a hundreds of them you could debate is the best. Those are just the two I threw out. But extraordinary writing. And then the Beatles. I mean, Jesus, there's probably a dozen from the Beatles that would, you know, Let It Be. I mean, look, the world needs kindness, man. We got to be kind to each other and stop with this lying, spinning crap and just find a way to live in the truth and start healing each other, our planet, nature. I mean, you know, we got to get these greedy bastards that are running the world out and get people that focus on kindness. That was the theory originally of government. Some countries are still doing it quite well, but man, we only have one Earth. We got to start caretaking it. You know, we're not going to live on Mars. So what the hell? I mean, I hope everyone starts, mainly people like the 100 million people that don't vote. If any of you are listening to me and Nestor, we are in trouble. Go vote. All right. Just register and vote. I'm hoping the youth is paying attention to the madness and going, these adults are really screwing things up, man. We all got to all register and vote. Get some people in there that are focused on, you know, healing, kindness, health care, climate, all of that stuff. Just common sense. And the funny thing is, Nestor, there's solutions. There's a lot of solutions. But to the trillionaires in charge, they don't want to be bothered. And they can still keep their money. That wouldn't you want a beautiful planet to be a big shot on? Why not? Well, because you're addicted to the greed of, you know, the addicted to the addiction of greed and corruption and money. And that's sad. But we can change it. We got to do it. That's the task at hand.
Lofgren is our guest from the E Street Band. His new album is Mountains. They're playing this month in and around, and hopefully forever. I know they've rescheduled dates for Philadelphia next summer because we had some illness a couple weeks. So I know they're still in the, you know, over the hill in August. We'll believe. I have to ask you this because you're fresh back from Europe, and people ask me all the time, how many times you've seen Bruce? And I'm like, more than 100, less than 200. I really don't know, but it's probably in the 130s, 140s that I've gone all over the world seeing you guys. Say why?
Wow.
And I'm like, well, we went to Australia. I've seen you the last two times you played in Brisbane and in Sydney and over in Christchurch and up in Auckland. And I went to
Right.
New Zealand, and this is us traveling the world and getting to see the world and meeting other people, going to China, going to Japan to see you two, going to Korea to see you two, coming over to Europe to see you guys in different places. But we went
Yeah.
to this trip in New Zealand when we left you in Christchurch before the
Right.
last show up in Auckland. We went down to the bottom of New Zealand and we went out onto this Doubtful Sound. We went and saw the glowworms, all of these crazy things at the bottom of the world below Queenstown, which is one of the most beautiful places on earth. And we went over these fjords and into the water. And there was an old, not elderly, an older man. He was in his 60s, no offense, but he was older than me, right? And he told
Right.
us that he looked up on the mountaintops that we're at the bottom of the physical planet at the bottom of New Zealand. And he said, this is the first time in my life I've been able to see the top of any of this because the snow's melting. For the first 55 years of my life, I couldn't see that. Now, we're, you know, at these edges of the world, how the climate is changing the planet. When you go see this for yourself and you, it's no longer anecdotal or I'm somewhere getting something from the internet or a news source of mainstream media or the, it, this is me having people tell me how much their world's changing at the bottom of the world. It's frightening in that way. And to see hurricanes taking out, making storms to take out Lahaina, you know, just hurricanes coming into Los Angeles. I mean, it's a crazy time for people not believing truth in science, Nils.
Well, look, the addiction of money, power, greed is destroying the earth. It just simply is. And like you said, those things are available. The information's available. There's a way, there's great solutions to turn the ship around that allow, you know, billionaires to keep their money. They're just not, they're too mentally ill to realize the danger we're in as a planet. You know, it's not just, oh, I've got my little, you know, castle for all my family. Why should I care about anyone else? Well, because if you don't have the earth, I mean, when there's, you know, 10 million climate refugees because of climate, where people can't live safely in many places on earth, and they come for you, what are you going to do? What, you're going to stay in the guest house? Are you going to kill them all? No. And it's just amazing, the blindness, you know, that comes with that addiction. And we're in it, man. We got to, the only way, I mean, really, now, like I said it again, the 100 million people in America that don't vote, go register and vote, man. And right now, I mean, I'm an independent. I don't think either party's done that great. But, you know, right now we got a party that wants to end democracy. So we just got to vote them out and get, you know, people in there that are like-minded and think about solutions and they're serious about it. And right now, there's only one side even talking about that. Yes, they're both flawed. They both have mistakes. But we've got one party now that wants to end democracy so their rich donors can get richer. Having a few trillion dollars is enough. If you don't think it is, go to a psychiatrist. You know, talk to some people that do charity work. Get your head on straight. But, you know, I mean, I'm just kind of figuratively complaining about these people because they're destroying a beautiful planet, and there's no need to. There's solutions.
I saw you out eating Scottsdale's best pizza with Jamie Raskin, who's been on the program from time to time. So I knew you were discussing democracy there at that point. Just to the tour and where you are in the band and the album, and I don't know if you're going to come in and play Ram's Head at some point, or you're thinking about doing that after being on the road so long with E Street. But you know, I guess goals for the album, and then the near short term of, you got some Bruce shows, you're going up to Canada, you're playing around, you're going to be out in LA at Christmas time. I'm going to try to come out and see the show once or twice. You've been playing the same set list, and I know that's been great controversy as to how many shows did I've seen it five times now, how many times you want to see it. But you guys are working, man. Every other day you're in stadiums here for a little while and then arenas. This has been just like Bruce, right? Like hill charging at this point in all of your careers to have this kind of an ambitious tour.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's 90 shows this year, and we got about 24 or 5 left to get to the middle of December. And I will say, I mean, I understand that, you know, we went through a period where it was fun. It was reckless. I mean, Bruce would call 10, 12 audibles a night. He wouldn't know what's next. But it never allowed you to get too deep in any one song. Because I don't know, I don't care how good you are. If you play a song once, yeah, it's going to be fine because everyone's a great musician. You play it 10, 20 times, you get a deeper focus. Everyone starts reacting to each other in a deeper way. And honestly, I think we've been out 1 year, not quite. I think we played like 65 different songs. Comparatively, most bands never play 65 different songs. And, you know, what I'm feeling up there is so magical that my thing is, you know, Bruce gives me a list. He wants to call an audible, whatever he wants to do. I want to help him project it, because if we're all down in it together, it's spreading a lot of love and joy and kindness and healing. And that's the name of the game. I understand the complaints, but, you know, I respect Bruce for whatever the hell he wants to do. And, you know, I've been there hundreds of nights where he's walked up and called a different song, and he, and we just do it. And if, you know, when you play the next thing on the list, you kill it. You get down deep in it. And most people feel the connection, feel the love, and feel the joy. And hopefully that lingers as they leave the whatever, the sports arena, the stadium, that lingers in their lives. And that's, you know, what we're doing. We're still doing it great. That's my opinion. And I'm feeling it every night. So, yeah, man, come see us. Mountains, of course. Selfishly, I want this to last as long as Bruce is comfortable singing and playing. Hell, I'd like Neil Young to take Crazy Horse out and play with them. I miss doing that. I want to do that. And of course, inevitably, health permitting, the world permitting, at some point when I have free time, Amy and I'll look at getting back out, doing our own tours in England, Europe, and the States, of course. But right now, I'm deep down in this and very grateful about it.
Well, I would just say this. I got to get Bobby Jean one of these nights, man. I mean, come on. I miss the ones in Europe. But I it is interesting that all of our relationship, all these years, there have been many, many nights where you have left me backstage passes in the E Street Lounge before the show, and I get a text from you saying, can't come in tonight. I got homework. And then I go out in Brisbane, and you guys open a show with Stayin' Alive, and then break out an album you hadn't done in 25 years. Jake says to me in the room that night, he's like, you better hold on tonight. We're going to be doing stuff that has never been done. And next thing I know, you're doing Sandy and you're doing all of this stuff that had never, and the specialness of it, but how hard it was for you guys to have to learn music at 2 in the afternoon because Bruce gives you 3 songs you haven't done in 30 years.
Yeah, or he may mention 5 or 6 to be on top of. You might play all of them or none of them. And it's funny you say that because last night was the first time all year I got to the E Street Lounge all year. To see, you know, some really good friends, Branford Marsalis, incredible musician, sax player, a dear friend from Amnesty Tour in 88. He came down. We hung out. One of my dear friends, a doctor in New York City, Dr. Howard Cher, was there with his family. First time I went to the lounge. So I don't even go there anymore because I've got homework. And even if there's not like 5 new songs to brush up on, I just have stuff to do to feel as right as I can to walk out there. And that's a joy to have that freedom. And, you know, going down to visit with 100 strangers that want a picture and autograph, I mean, that's a kind thing to do, but it's to me, counterproductive to the show and preparing for it. You know, in my own shows, which is 85% of a 55-year career, if I see a title I don't like, I don't sing it. With Bruce, whatever he calls, we do. So I like to be prepared, and the goal is to prepare enough so when I walk out, I like to turn my mind off. Just trust the musical instinct I have, a gift I didn't ask for, and just let it work through me. Whatever I feel, play it because it works. And that's one of the beauties of live. You know, you check in with your family. Amy's okay. Dylan's all right. The dogs are good. You leave the phone off stage. You walk out there. Nobody taps you on the shoulder. Let's try a different arrangement. And for 3 hours, man, you just fly. And you let a gift you didn't ask for take over. And whatever it tells you to play, you play it. And that's the beauty of live, and I'm still doing it. And like I say, like Ringo learned, it's a gift. I got to exercise it. And he figured out how to do it. God bless his heart. He's going out at 83 this fall. And hopefully I'll get to go see him play because he's an incredible inspiration.
I love your Ask Me series out there. I'm glad that you played Ask Me here with me for a little while. Nils Lofgren, the album is Mountains. The tour is E Street. You know all about it. Get down to either of the stadiums earlier at Oriole Park and, of course, at Nats Park and then back in Philly next year. And now you'll see me on the road somewhere, sometime. I'll say, hey, man, I'm in town tonight. You know, are you coming to the E Street Lounge? But stay, it's just so great. It really is inspirational for all of you to come out and what is church for a lot of us, right? Which is a place to come and let loose for 3 hours or 2 hours and 48 minutes, however long it's going to be. And if you're playing Kitty's Back, in honor of my dear, late, great, awesome feline Calico Kitty, who I named after the song many years ago, then it's a good night in Baltimore, Nils.
Yeah, man, I love the stadium in Baltimore is going to be rocking. We're going to do a great show. The audiences there have always been spectacular. I'm excited to come your way and play. And yeah, I mean, it's a church of sorts of, you know, music, joy, kindness, inspiration. And that's what we want to hit you with and send you out. And you all give it to us, too. So excited to come there and play. And it's always great to talk to you, Nestor.
Going
to
be some sweet sounds coming down. Nils Lofgren joining
that's
us
right.
Here. That's it. Mountains is the album. Please go check it out. Always, always appreciative of our time, our friendship, our story. I didn't even ask you about Bullets Fever. And I made a point in this interview for anybody that's all the way through it. He and I have hours of stuff up at BaltimorePositive.com, in the audio vault, at WNST Classic. It's on YouTube. If you want more Bruce, if you want more Clarence, if you want 2 days before they went on stage in Tampa at the Super Bowl, there's an hour of that. All of that stuff is out there. I'm Nestor. We're WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. They're hard rock and roll with local guys and Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.
Thanks, Nestor.